Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Tweet at Miriam O'Cal. Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Our text number is 51551. You can email Miriam at rt.ie. Some reaction there to the great Mary Coughlin and Ulton Conlon. Miriam Galway and Lochray Abu. Wonderful to hear Mary and Ulton sing about misery and love so beautifully this morning. One more from Pori Campbell in Galway says, Mary was singing in Munro's last night with a mighty piano player. She played a blinder as usual. She never lost the magic, and that's true. And they'll be coming back later on to sing for us again. Well, here in studio now is Senator Lynn Ruan, and I'm so lucky to have in studio with me as well, Lynn's mum Bernie. You're both very welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Lovely to meet you. But actually, I know you both going back years, of course, through that charity On Cusson in Tala.
Yes, my mum's actually on the board of On Cusson now, which is, you know, yeah, it's nice to see the connection still there.
For people who don't know, first of all, what On Cusson is, tell them what it is, Lynn, because it was so important to you turning your life around.
It
wasn't
was. It? I didn't realise at the time it was turning my life around, because I was still probably very, you know, rough around the edges for a long time after that. But what it did was, it wasn't so much what I learned. And I think sometimes people think that community education is all about, you know, getting skills for the market and becoming like some top notch, you know, in some employment somewhere. But it wasn't. It's about, sometimes it's about, you know, healing some of that trauma that sometimes people experience in areas of deprivation. Yeah. And for me, it gave me a sense of healing and filled some of them foundations in my own core that I needed to be able to actually realise that I was able, or that I wanted to pursue education. So for me, On Cusson was very much about learning to be still. I enjoyed the meditation part. I used to, one of the most, the best days from them 2 years I spent in On Cusson was in Anne Louise Gilligan's and Catherine's house.
Catherine's upon.
Yeah. And it was amazing. I remember just feeling really still for the first time in many, many years after a lot of trauma, and really realising that actually maybe I can do this, maybe I can achieve something. So that's what On Cusson gave me, was maybe the belief that I could do something else.
And of course, your new book, which has been top of fiction for a good few weeks, certainly up there still in the top five, People Like Me. It was a great book. For people who don't know your story, because I always assume everyone knows everyone's story. But Lynn, for people who don't know your story, tell them in a paragraph.
Okay, like, in a paragraph. So I suppose I had any normal childhood, lovely, lovely parents, had one brother. My early years, I just remember, you know, normal playing in the cul-de-sac, playing street games, that kind of thing. I suppose when I started to move, I was always kind of probably still quite cheeky and pushed the boundaries a little bit as a kid, but nothing too serious. I was still good at school. My mum focused a lot on her education and making sure that she was very involved at that level. And then I suppose near my teenage years, I just experienced a lot of hardship, I suppose. Not so much in directly to me, but in my environment. So my conditions that I grew up in terms of my community and everything that was happening there started to really have an impact on me. And I started to kind of push down boundaries a little bit more. I suppose I used drugs as throughout my teenage years. Had my daughter when I was 15, and that kind of helped me stop for a moment and think about what I wanted to do. And that's when On Cusson came in. And I attended On Cusson, and Jordan could come with me. So that would have been key at that time.
Which is your daughter.
Yeah. So I wouldn't have been able to actually pursue education had On Cusson not have had the childcare facility. So that was kind of key in that moment. And I suppose it's been a long road, still lots of hardships and troubles, even as a mother. And Jordan always jokes, said that she had to watch me go through puberty. So she was obviously the child of a teenage mother. So there was still all the hardships of that and everything that brought. And then developed addiction programs for 17 years, worked in the homeless sector, and then decided to go to Trinity College. Got in through the Access program there, which was obviously set the real foundations for me to be able to achieve academically. And then ran for the president of the Students' Union, and then ran for the Shannon. And here I am now with the book, explaining that in all much more detail.
But it is such an inspirational story. Is it true that you used to walk through the grounds of Trinity, which I'm not sure if it gave you the idea for going there. Tell me about
that. Yeah, like I only walked through once. It was once when I was going to a course that was based on, I think it was Westmoreland Street. And somebody told me that I could cut through Trinity to take a few minutes off my journey. And it was windy and rainy. And I remember walking into Front Square and the wind just stopping because of the walls around it. And I remember just going, how come it seems so much nicer in here? It was like nearly hurricane weather outside, but something stopped still in Trinity. And that feeling stayed with me. And it was years later then I decided to go to Trinity and leave the addiction sector at the time, which was kind of being decimated by austerity cuts. And I felt I wasn't in a strong enough position educationally to be able to articulate the groundbreaking work that was happening in communities that was being destroyed by austerity. So I wanted to become part of decision making. And that's what led me to Trinity in the end.
And Bernie, for you, first of all, I heard this morning, you had taught Lynn to really read around the age of two.
I did. Herself and Jay, I used to buy books every week in the shop, and one Ladybird book would go into the shop and we'd go home and we'd sit down, and they were easy read books, so the words would be probably two lines on each page. And we went from there, and by the time she was starting school at four, she was well able to read. So she used to bring the books to school with her then.
Because and you were working as a seamstress, weren't you?
I was working at home in the kitchen.
Wow.
And yeah, John used to bring the work home to me. I'd work, get them off to school and then sit there sewing all day. And then they'd come in and I'd stop sewing and they'd come in then from school.
So you yourself kind of knew from a very young age that education was a key in a way to your children doing well.
Absolutely, particularly books. Mm. I loved to read myself as well. So I was always reading a book anyway. So particularly books, we always had books, we always bought them. Instead of comics, it was always a Ladybird book, and then we progressed on to Ina Blyton books as she got a bit older.
I think it was that confidence my mum gave me in reading that saved my life in the end, because it wasn't even that I could read, it was the confidence that it instilled in me to read things I didn't necessarily understand. So at that time when I was considering whether I was going to use heroin or not, it was when that led me to the library and I was reading books on addiction that I didn't really understand, but I had the confidence to read them. So I think that early confidence that was instilled in me at the age of two to just not be afraid of books and not be afraid of words actually saved me at many stages throughout my life as well, in terms of me understanding what was going on for myself and the world around me, you know.
Which is great. Now, how did you deal? We've all heard Lynn's story a lot, but how did Bernie, Lynn's mum, cope with the years when she went off the rails, first of all?
A lot of heartache. I have four sisters, so I had great support. I also have five brothers, but my sisters were always there behind me. They'd always take Lynn over to Blanchardstown away from trouble for me. So they always were a great help to me. You know, yeah. So if there was any big trouble coming along, I'd ring my sisters and we'd get on the M50 across to Blanchardstown.
All the Northsiders came out and they would take me back over to the North.
And I would leave her there for a few days at times until it settled down, and then we'd get her back. But it was a lot of heartache for us both, for myself and John. And we'd be out night time, crawling the streets, looking for her. We were always out. No matter what trouble she gave us, we still went looking for her, you know. But I'd ring her friend's mammies, where she's supposed to be saying that somebody take the phone, saying, yeah, she's staying here tonight. And it was never such a thing. I knocked on doors early in the morning, nearly knowing she wasn't there, and she wasn't, you know. And then I'd say, well, but you weren't there. I was up there knocking there this morning at 9 o'clock, you know.
Yeah. And you're so close now, because I know you live together now. I mean, you are so close, aren't
we
you?
We are. She moved out for a little while, and even when she moved out, she was still home. You know, I'd say she'd stay away probably one or two nights and she'd be back home, and she only had Jordan then and she had Jalen. So we work well together,
yeah.
You know.
Tell our listeners the story about how you heard age 15 that she was pregnant.
Do you know, Lynn didn't quite remember this even when she was writing her book, and I told her afterwards. She was walking across in a factory, sewing, and she had rang me and said her back was sore. And I said, well, you'll need to go to the doctor. And she said, yeah. And she said nothing. And I said, because I knew she was kind of seeing Alan at the time. And I said, when you're at the doctor, you might ask him about the pill. And I was in work, and next fall I get a phone call. And she said she was pregnant and hung up. And I was in work, and I think I went home and I said to John, and she came in then with Alan. And it was just shock, you know. And I just said, well, there is choices here. And that's all I said was, there was choices. And it was a big shock, and it was a shock for John. But we worked around it, and nothing. People were saying, she's 15, did you kill her, did you diss? And I said, why? The baby was still going to be there. It wasn't going to change anything. You know, we just have to work at it and see what we could do. And we just walked around it and got there.
So now you can see why I've got this far, like, in fairness, like, I mean, yeah. The strength and consistency of my parents throughout my whole life has been, you know, I always had a safety net, you know, always. And I think I always knew that. I probably abused it at times, you know, but I always knew that, you know.
But reading in your book as well, I think when you did have Jordan, that was almost a wake-up call for you, wasn't it? I mean, having her changed you, changed your life.
It did, because I knew I had something else to live for, and maybe somewhere in me for those teenage years, I had a big hole in my heart, and I suppose loving her allowed me to fill that somewhat. And the support that I had from my parents and Alan and his parents, you know, it was very much, you know, that saying, like, it takes a community to raise a child, that very much happened with me, you know. And I suppose that's why when people congratulate me on, you know, being a mother and the kids, I'm always very slow to say I can't take all the credit here. There was definitely a team effort, you know. And I'm sure even through Jordan's earlier life, there was times my mom would be ringing me phone saying, "You on the way home or what?" Like, you know.
Is that true, Bernie?
Absolutely. She was still going out at night, and we'd have the baby, and I used to say, "I babysit from 8 till 8 in the morning, and that's it." You know, but it could be the middle of the day the next day by the time she'd arrive, you know. So, but she has settled down now anyway.
Yeah, she's done bringing her now a senator. Yeah. Do you ever look back now and wonder, because you do speak to a lot of young people as well, Lynn, about why you, rather than someone else, did go off the rails? Do you ever wonder that? Like, what was it?
Well, I think everybody experiences things differently, and, like, everybody has different realities of how they take information in. Obviously, I experienced a lot of death around me at a young age. You know, so many people in communities like mine across the country experience way too much hardship at a very young age. So you could be a child experiencing repeated trauma, and that has an impact. And I think sometimes when we experience that level of trauma, that level of helplessness and lack of power within communities like mine, we feel like we've less to lose. So we become risk takers in our own lives, because we feel like, well, what's the point? We can't see forward, you know, we're only in the present. And I think we just feel like we've less to lose, you know, because we can't kind of picture what life will be like in 10, 15, 20 years. And I think we all internalize some of the poverty and some of the shame and some of the hardship in different ways. So different children will behave differently with that level of trauma in their lives.
Were you very proud when she became a senator?
I was. I was very proud when she first went to Trinity, because she used to say she was going to go to Trinity, and I always just, no matter what Lynn tells me, I agree with her. I'd just say yeah. But she does make it happen. Lots of things she'd tell me, and I'd say, "I always just agree, yeah, you'll do that, Lynn." And I'd just say, "We'll wait and see." But she always makes it happen. And she did make it happen. And yeah, definitely very proud.
On the day of the count, me ma and all our sisters are barely 5 foot, right? And in the day of the count in Trinity, the railings, you know, looking over onto the count, they had never gone to a political count before. And by the second day, the two of them are hanging over the barrier saying, "Here, you're the miscounting that." And we had to read, like, correcting all the people that were there doing the count in the Shannon vote. It was amazing to watch how invested they came in them 3 days in the exam hall in Trinity for the Shannon count.
Yeah. It was great. It was great fun. I took 2 days off work and I went in, and we were there all day, and we stayed the night in Trinity and back the next morning. It was great fun.
And our sisters, when I wasn't staying in my apartment in Trinity, right, I went on a holiday and I got a call from her and the sisters. They were having a party in my apartment in Front Square. They were after sneaking in past the security for the night and having a party in my apartment in Front Square when me and the kids lived there.
Payback,
so we all
time.
Made the most of it.
For all the years they minded you, Lynn. Do you think you can achieve much as a senator now that you are a senator? Do you feel it's worthwhile?
Yes, completely worthwhile. And I think there's not enough attention paid to the Shannon. If you look at the civil engagement group, which I'm part of, there's six of us, and the achievements as a group that we've achieved, I'd say, is probably more than a lot of the other smaller groups and parties within the Shannon at the minute, because we all come from a social justice background and we've really allowed our lives experience to seep into the legislation. We have legislation at the minute at various different stages within the Shannon. Some has made its way to the Dáil. We've won lots of amendments to legislation, and we've also convinced the governed parties on many occasions to change parts of policy. And I think as long as I can achieve that, I'll stay there. If the numbers don't, are not in my favour at some stage, well, then I'll have to reevaluate the impact that, that I can have. But right now, myself and the civil engagement group are actually really doing really powerful work, and I'd love to try and capture that some, because I don't think that translates
enough,
you know, because the media and the political correspondents are so much very focused on the Dáil that they're not actually seeing that within the Seanad there's a committee stage, and a huge amount of work is actually getting done on legislation in the committee stage in the Seanad.
Well, look, Lynn and Bernie, I'll read you one. Regina Heafy says, "Hi, Miriam, I admire Lynn so much. She's an inspiration to us all, especially young people." And you are, Lynn.
Thank you.
But behind every great woman, I say, is a greater woman. And yeah, that's Bernie, your mum there. Bernie, Lynn, thanks so much for taking the time to come to us this morning.
Thank you.
Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.